The Self-Helpful Podcast is brought to you by Ziglar, your premier source for equipping coaches to help leaders and top performers excel professionally and personally. Visit Ziglar.com and let them inspire your true coaching performance. Welcome to the Self-Helpful Podcast. I'm Kevin Miller, and this is the podcast people tune into for in-depth discussions on the latest research from our foremost leaders in self-improvement, so you can be growing and more equipped to live at your fullest capacity in body, mind, and soul. We continue the question and answer session from our last Functional Friday episode. Here we address a bunch of listener inquiries. Here are some of the things that we do get into. Balancing exercise. In regards to our effort, do we always need to be killing ourselves in every exercise session that we do? The answer is no. You'll hear more in a second, though. Losing momentum, that's a big topic. Anyone with a new health and wellness initiative is going to lose momentum, even with an old one that we do routinely for so long. At some point, life's going to happen, things happen, we lose momentum. And it's really not the end of the world. I've come to expect it and to have it as part of my cycles. But we talk about that because it's hard. We address the faith you have in doing what you set out to do. It's a big one. We talk about how to stop nervous eating. Somebody asked about that. And we end with a biggie, how to kick the sugar habit. I don't even like the sound of that. Nobody wants to do that. But, you do for health reasons, but your taste buds don't want you to do that. At least mine don't. So we get into that one. I am, of course, with my Functional Friday co-host, Randy James, medical doctor and functional medicine expert. And just as with the last Functional Friday episode, much of what we discuss, we bring in examples from Randy, him sharing firsthand experiences with the thousands of patients who come in and pay cash for him to get to the root problems of their issues. And on that, of course, not everyone can get in to work with Dr. James, but a lot of people do. You can inquire with him at truelifemedicine.com or just email them directly at info@truelifemedicine.com. Hey, if you found value in this self-helpful podcast, it's just a gift to me. And to us, and to our guests, if you would leave a review, thanks to a lot of you who've done that lately, leave a review and let us know what you thought of a show, what you think of the show. And you can always connect with me at my website or social media at kevinmiller.co. The thing we hope you do most is take these issues and share them with other people, talk about them, discuss them, grapple with them like I do on the show with my guests. Next up, Dr. James and I answer listener questions on functional medicine and health and wellness. All right, well, we're just going to continue on with questions and answers because, man, there's just great stuff. Jeff, he's a Navy guy, and his question is just in regards to maintaining balance. And I said, well, in life overall or health and wellness, he said, in diet and exercise mostly. He says, I think Western culture has always taught us more is better and extreme is rewarded. David Goggins, you know David Goggins, the You Can't Hurt Me, he's the special forces guy. You're not out there in the media, but he's big name out there. You got a big pod.
That was Jocko.
It's very similar. Okay. Very similar scenario. So David Goggins has become, he's a newer guy, famous for exactly this message, but is it a healthy way to live? Extreme diets, 100-mile endurance events. I've completed multiple accomplishments in endurance sports and found I was only filling a void for something else missing in my life. I'll start you off with a shallow one.
Yeah. What a shallow guy. No, I'm smiling because I just talked about it yesterday with a wife of somebody who's one of these You Can't Hurt Me guys and, goes camping. How cold can I tolerate? How long can we be out here without eating? How far can we run? And so we kind of joked because they also know our 100-miler friend. And Dave, in that instance, you know, he's not running for health. If you're running 100 miles, you're running for something else. So,
we'll go ahead and hit that because you talk about that. So if I'm even to the extent of some of my mountain biking, and when you go to that extreme end, that's your statement is that's not necessarily for physical health. Now I might be feeding a mental desire. And
that's right. So you might be scratching an itch mentally that if you didn't do that, your wife would say, oh my gosh, get out of the house, right? And so there's that, but it's, and you're going to laugh at this, but it's just like the guy that we say, hey, don't quit smoking yet because you'll kill your wife. So he summarized that. That's a really, it's an insightful question. And so in my mind, there's always the famous upside down U-shaped curve.
Yeah.
Right on the X-axis and Y-axis on the, if you think of an upside down U, zero exercise in this case is zero health benefit. It's really bad for you. And a steep, if you just barely do anything, it's so good for you. It's from the
couch.
So
much better than nothing. Yeah.
It's so much better than nothing. And that steep curve kind of continues. And so as I relate this to people and people living real lives out there, it's kind of, you know, the idea that the next level up might be what I would call high school sports. Okay. So where it's not super intense, it's a kind of social thing. You've got a few kids who are really, really good, and maybe they get a scholarship or whatever else, but that's the steep part of the curve where most people could fit. And then the top of that curve, I would put at college athletics.
Yeah.
Now you're starting to be so competitive that you're willing to sacrifice your body for the team. You're willing to take one for the team and this kind of, and like, and it depends on the sport too. Nobody goes into high school football for health. You just don't do that. You don't become a healthier person if you're getting banged on the head that many times.
Well, unless it's opposed to the sedentary doing nothing.
Then, correct.
I mean, and to some of this, I wanted to come to, you know, what is the goal? So, you know, if Jeff is asking balance for health, if I'm asking, so I'm 50 years old, what should I be doing to be that healthy 80-year-old? And saying, is a 100-mile race good? You'd say, No, but maybe better than sitting on the couch.
Zero.
But if we're, but what's that goal? So, I mean, cause you told me that, in regards to our 100-mile friend, I mean, that may be chipping away at his longevity to some degree.
Every 100-mile race, I think that took longevity from you. Your life is now shorter.
But I would put that above his peers who are sitting on the couch doing nothing.
Right.
With no exercise, no health and nutrition, that he's going to be better cognitively or whatever over here. But yeah, he's gone too far past just, I'm doing this for health and balance, like Jeff says.
That's right. So he overshot the top of that U curve and he's on the other side. Is he as far down the other side of the curve as the zero, the upside down U? Is he?
I just can't imagine.
I would agree not. That he's up here somewhere.
But so to his, so to Jeff's thing on, you know, David Goggins and Jocko who are doing these things to prove, you know, a strength or whatever. I mean, does that elevate them in a mental strength to do something?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And but that doesn't go to balance and health necessarily.
Correct. Let's look at the high power executive is longevity wise. If you look at executives, they're going to be better off than couch potatoes. But how many executives have lost their marriage, lost their kids, lost whatever, and in that sense, they're shortening their longevity, but they got a lot of money, they got a lot of pat on the back, they got achievement.
Well, if you go to just health and balance, I'm almost drawn back to Dan Buettner's Blue Zones, and it's people who just live this nice, vital, moderate lifestyle of health and cycling their food and joy and
movement,
laughter over a glass of wine at dinner and slow food and just all these nice things. And it's not my frantic life to some degree, even where I'm trying to do more.
And it would never get into the extreme or the frantic or the high accolades.
Yeah.
There's no,
they're not going to
Nobel prizes coming from the island of Crete.
Yeah.
Or Olympic athletes probably, or whatever, but they live a long,
But I like that though. That's the disservice
that we do in America typically.
Exactly. Cause you hear from the people who are
Jocko extreme. And Goggins.
Yeah.
There's not the, come listen to the podcast of the normal 9-to-5 guy who loves his wife and brings flowers
really
home.
Healthy.
He's really happy.
Everywhere.
Yeah, he can stretch and touch his toes.
Doesn't
and
sell.
He can run 5 miles. And
so that's a great point that the people we are hearing from
boring.
Are probably primarily all on the extreme side. So we're not hearing from the couch because they don't have anything to say.
I mean, right.
In all
right.
due respect. Well, and not much respect, actually. They're on the couch. They don't have much to say. Over here, we have the extremists. They're the ones talking. I mean, my gosh, if you look at that, even the personality style to get on a microphone, to write a book, to whatever, a certain, you know, you're hearing from a segment. And then health is probably from the people you never hear from. And, you know, we've even had, I mean, I have my own issues with that. It is very difficult for me, and we've known this for years, to exercise moderately. My joy, there's also my own baggage. I want to go out and pound myself to death, running, riding, whatever, and extreme every day. That's not even better for my progress.
Your physical side, right?
Yeah. So I need to go out and do it's back in my cycling, LSD, long, slow distance. Man, I just don't want to. I want to just go pound out a good hour. I'm feeding something else. That is, so back to Jeff, that is not balance necessarily. So it's a great question that we don't see a whole lot of models from.
I would agree. And it also is nearly unanswerable, because if Kevin said, okay, how many times per week can I go pound it for an hour? I don't know. I mean, again, on the medical side, there's not going to be a biomarker that says, you just tipped it over.
From a sports side, I would say two to three. It seems like lately I'm hearing more about two killer workouts, then be active the other days, and then rest one day.
Well, it's going to depend. If you've got a guy training for...
Well, we're back to the goal.
If
my goal is to win the mountain bike national championships,
then you're going to have to pound it a lot and have less rest days, but you have to have rest days
still
in
have
there.
To
but
have rest days. Still
so need, now you're into sports science, sports nutrition, and those guys are set up based on goals.
Well, like this, he's David Goggins, Jocko. They are out there trying to achieve these physical, mental milestones for whatever reason, they can be done, to prove they can do it. But is that health and balance? Well, I mean, and if it is, if they need to, back to your thing though, if I need to do that to keep me from murdering people, there's something else wrong. Like
and you're not going to come out the other side. Likely, you're not going to come out the other side and say, I successfully didn't murder people by 20 years of pounding it an hour a day. That's not going to be a podcast.
But we see that. I think we see that with a lot of the extremists, and I'm not saying that these guys are, I can't point fingers, but there's a lot of extremists who I think are doing it to try to balance out something that's really broken.
I would agree, but I don't know the Navy SEAL culture. I was in the military.
Seems extremist.
I'll bet this, for every Jocko and Goggins, there's 40 broken guys who are depressed, anxious, angry. Their back hurts. They are.
You better
broken.
Watch out what you say. We're going to get taken out.
Sorry, guys. No, but it's even our friends and your wife works for them that, you know, that 20-year career, people come out of the 20. My partner, you know, they don't come out and say, that was so good for me.
Well, I thought you were going to bring up our friend who was a fighter pilot.
Yes,
and his,
I mean him.
What'd he do? He blew out his eardrums and he did the, I mean,
to stay flying.
Killer achievements. It didn't promote balance, health, and wellness.
No, and all of those guys, look at the VA system.
Yeah.
Right? You come out from a 20-year career and there's not a VA full of Jockos.
Yeah.
It's full of brokenness.
And we can say that with NFL athletes, man. They are out there making millions of dollars and then spending the latter part of their lives primarily trying to make it
just
past
that's right. Yeah. And look at the whole concussion movie.
Yeah.
But let's also say that about the broken megachurch pastors, the broken executives, the broken moms who have not taken care of themselves because they've sacrificed themselves on the idol of momism for 3, 4, 5 kids.
Which brings a frustrating thought of, can you have this significant above average achievement in any way and do it in health and wellness? And I'd say it's hard because you're competing against somebody who will sacrifice health and wellness achieve it.
Yeah.
That's like saying, I was a past pro cyclist. Can I win the Tour de France without drugs? Probably not. Because at this point, we figure everybody's doing it.
And we live in Olympic City, right? So all of the USA Cycling and Triathlon and all that stuff's here. And you've been to the Olympic Museum?
Yeah. The Olympic Training Center?
The Olympic Training Center.
Oh, yeah. I go do my, Penny Ante race that I think. And there's some ex-Olympian dude who's still leagues beyond
Did you take
me.
The tour?
Oh, gosh. Back in the 90s.
Okay. So I remembered this one. So you do the tour and they had to... There was a fence around the weight room, and then they had to put concertina wire above the fence because especially there was the wrestlers, the boxers, and those guys would have completed their workout for the day, and they're going to bed.
And they come back.
And they wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're like, oh my gosh, that Russian dude that I got to, he is training right now. I got to go. I got to get in there. I got to pound.
I get that.
Sacrifice. Yeah. And then, you know, Joe Schmo, who's doing an 8-to-5 job, wants to compete with that. You can't. Yeah. And so it is the extreme that gets the, they get the podcast, they get the blogs, they get the likes and however, you know, the influence, the new thing on the internet, the tweets and whatever. It's extreme. And even in our cultural, you know, with the racial tension, it's the extreme things that get on the news. Mm-hmm. It's not, look at this happy, you know, guy who's successfully doing something.
If it bleeds, it leads. It's always been that way. I think it always will be. But I think that gets some good, you know, some good points. Again, what is your goal? And yeah, are you trying to achieve a big achievement for its sake that may be outside or above and beyond health and wellness, or is the goal health and wellness? And I surely don't want to, my gosh, I think I have achieved some good things. I want to achieve even more while striving that tension of maintaining health and wellness and not breaking myself.
Right. Well said. And I think you and I would also say it's a big achievement to be a husband.
Yeah.
And a dad.
Well, to be a good one.
Okay. Right. That's what I mean. To be a husband that your wife actually wants.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it isn't in our culture.
Yesterday, I'm at 10 o'clock. I was out on the deck with five of my kids having devotions and talking about faith and spirituality. And
that's a big deal.
To you. Yeah.
To me.
Thank you. I know, but it's not, I'm not
going to give you accolades.
Thank you.
I'll buy your book.
Thank you. Cause nobody else will, you know, and that's the things that we do that aren't going to get a claim. It'll matter in their lives. It matters in my life, but yeah, it's not going to be on the front page news, and I'm not going to get a Nobel Prize for that.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is, we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
And isn't that unfortunate?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of our listeners are like, oh my gosh, me too. So into that, and Jeff's question is, you know, so should I, because it feels like the culture kind of insinuates that if you're not doing overnight hut trips in the mountains,
you'd have something cool to post on Instagram.
So it's the whole,
which I do, and I do thing. It too. It sells.
Well, and even if you posted, here's me and my five kids doing devotions, you know, it's going
to... That'll just raise questions. Right. What you teaching those kids? It's better to say, here we are having a party with pizza and whatever.
Right. So here we... It's the razor's edge of the dance of how to be a good husband, how to be a good father, how to be a good boss, entrepreneur, worker, follower of God. What does all that mean? And he's asking the question, you know, because we get inundated with the Jockos and the Goggins and the Rogans and the whoever's that are doing crazy fun, whatever stuff. Even, you know, the Dude Perfect guys. Me and my boys, we watch that. And it's like, why can't I have a job where I just basically play and think of cool things to do all day long?
Yeah, at some point, I'll do some epic one, you know, 100 miles over 10,000 feet of climbing, whatever. And I'll do it for the achievement's sake, the experience sake. It'll probably hurt my health. I'll have to recover for a week.
Probably.
And burn some brain cells.
You would also do it, because our 100-mile friend Dave, who since then has not run another one, as far as I know. But I want to live the epic. Meaning, I want to live a story.
We have another friend. Well, why can't we say it? This isn't.
I don't know.
This isn't. What is it? HIPAA. He said Justin. So he just did. He just attempted. So it was just down the pass. They did have some big event, and he ran like 50 some miles and didn't finish it. Had a bad leg problem.
Oh no!
But he was out there not trying to foster physical health. He was trying to achieve something. Now, what it does for mental health, though, you know, again, it depends on the person, your goal.
That's right. And for both of those guys, Justin actually ran the last 25 with Dave on the. Run Rabbit Run.
Okay.
You're living a story. Yeah. You want to be able to tell a story, even if you're telling it to yourself, your kids, your friends, your tribe, and that's where, you know, our tribe is husbands and fathers and entrepreneurs and we have respect for those kind of guys. But at the same time, I think we also need to counsel one another and teach one another that. Right, that the accolades don't need to be in the extreme.
Yeah. And again, to what is that goal? And so if I look at some of those, especially the extremes like Jeff talks about, I'm concerned more about those now because I want to be, I mean, I'm dealing with plantar fasciitis right now and I want to run and hike and it hurts. I want to deal with that because I want to be 80 and 90 and running and riding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here, this is kind of in line here. Thomas asks about just digging. He says, digging oneself out of a hole when you get in one in regards to self-discipline, motivation, and inspiration. I remember this. So back in mid to late 2000s, and I had an organization that you remember you were part of helping people, walking with people, guiding them from traditional employment who wanted to pursue something in self-employment. And as anything, I mean, that journey is one of personal development. You're doing it for a reason, usually for a personal desire. I want to do something I have purpose, feel purpose in, something I own, something that inspires me, something I have flexibility, yada, yada, you know, all the different reasons. It's a very personal. So of course it got into a whole life issue and people would come in, join, you know, I had a membership or they'd come to an event, come in, do that, get mega inspired, yeah. give them information to start working through, and they may come up with, man, an idea that fits, and they're excited. So blah, blah, blah. So we got this trajectory up of excitement and inspiration and motivation and just really, you know, fulfillment. And then, and I saw it over and over and over. I'd see these people a month later, 3 months later, wasn't always the same, but at some point, all of a sudden you don't hear from them. Almost across the board, or a big percentage, you don't hear from them. And then you inquire or finally hear and say, man, I just lost momentum. And I kept hearing it over and over and over, to the point of me putting it down the front end and saying, okay, folks, you're going to start. Here we go. Step one, you're going to lose momentum. Like, yeah. Let's prepare for it. It's just going to, you can't keep up that trajectory. It's like the kids in the running race, those little kids, you know, if you put them in a 100-yard dash, they take off. If you put them in a mile race, they take off like it's a 100-yard dash. Yeah. And then they got to slow down because you can't maintain that. That's really what any new effort generally is. You come in with a lot of excitement and you start off with a bang and you really can't maintain that. Expect that you're going to, you know, come down and have it on the table. Know that that's going to happen. You're going to have to look at it, deal with it. And then that's where you start the plotting along, maybe. That's one aspect of what, what I thought of with Thomas.
I can speak into the same thing that we also, in the clinic, have as a part of, you know, it's kind of like appointment number one, appointment number two, and excitement is high, momentum is high, I'm here, I've committed. And then on number three, we say, okay, at 6 months, you're going to slump.
Yeah.
Because at 6 months, between now and 6 months, some vacation happens. Christmas, you know, July the 4th, hot dog weekend. Something happens.
Reason to fall off the wagon.
One of our good buddies, who is another one of these high living guys.
Yeah.
And I saw him in the grocery store on July the 4th. He had white hot dog buns.
Really?
Hot
dog. He's busted.
It's just so funny that anyway, and those kind of things happen. And so, but plan on it. And then I would tell, and even with that family, they're like, yeah, we're so clean. We're so good. We planned on it.
And when we're going to imbibe,
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I get that.
And so to the person though, that's in the slump of hot dogs every day, or they can't get off the couch, or thousand other things going on. And what you just described, and you also had people come here for events. So it was literally the literal mountaintop experience,
mm-hmm.
like a camp experience. And then you got to go back to the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you maintain that? What is your momentum there through? And that's where, you know, talking about Hardy and talking about all the guys where you set up your environment ahead of time. You get the junk out of the house. You plan a vacation around. Okay, we're not going to do it with that family because they always do X, Y, Z. But if we do it with this family, then we're going to be pretty good. You have to, foresight.
Your example is great. And I'm going to not pick on women. It seems like I hear about it from them. You get some woman and she's ready to go. She's going to lose weight, get fit, whatever. And she starts eating good food, eating good quantities, exercising, going to things. She does that for a week or whatever. And then the willpower starts to wane, just like Dr. Ben Hardy talks about in his book, Willpower Doesn't Work, starts to wane. And all the food and stuff, because her family's still eating like normal.
Yeah.
She may, well, like you and I, when we do stuff like that, like a fast or whatever, we're still cooking.
Yeah,
you're still cooking
for the family.
It's right there. And man, that is a hard battle. And to know that you have a finite amount of willpower,
it's like a muscle.
Yeah.
You can wear it out.
So what are you going to do? I mean, like in Thomas's case, I mean, one thing that comes to mind too is just that, how can you set up accountability knowing that you're going to, I mean, there's nothing you're going to go after. There's no pursuit of any worth any of us are going to go after that is not going to encounter a big challenge. I think a big challenge, not just, oh, it's a little hard, but it may feel insurmountable. And just know that that's going to happen. I mean, you know, it's biblically, you and I always go back to Moses. God said, go do this. He says, really? He says, yes, go do this. And then there's a Red Sea. Well, that doesn't make sense. God sent me to do this and I get the Red Sea. Whether you believe that story or not, I believe that story happens day in and day out with any achievement that we go after, that we feel called to do, convicted to do, whatever. You're going to hit that thing. So what do you do to prepare for it? One, and accountability, again, is another one. Just having somebody be, you and I do that a lot.
Right.
You'll come to me and go, okay, I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to try this. I'm going to do this or whatever. And now I know. And now you're that much more convicted.
Convicted.
Or committed. Whatever.
Committed. You and I on the fasting thing, it's easier if we do it together because then our deck time. Lunchtime is
you're not sitting there eating in front of me while I'm wishing I could eat.
Right. And we've both done it alone and it's harder.
Yeah.
So in the accountability world and on the doctoring side, I think also is the idea of partnering with a doctor that is a docent, a teacher.
I've heard, I don't know what that word is.
A docent. Okay. And everybody remembers Karate Kid. Well, okay. People like us who are old enough. And do you remember what you call your karate instructor?
Sensei.
That's what they call their doctor in Japan. That word is Japanese. So sensei is the same word you wear for coach is for your doctor.
Huh.
In America, we don't have that nuance to the word. And therefore, people have lost the accountability relationship with their sensei.
Yeah.
But think of how they treated their sensei. Right, the amount of respect. It's more than
I think pastors used to be that too.
And that's
not,
right.
They're not anymore now.
They're just less talking head. High school football coaches, and there's been great ones along the past, and then really bad ones or whatever else. But so imagine, you know, not the bad sensei in Karate Kid, but the good guy.
Yeah.
And the level of respect,
Mr. Miyagi,
that he also had for his students.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by accountability, I'm gonna make you feel bad if you don't do this. Like, how many people tell Jane, our coach, is like, well, I didn't want to come in because I didn't do what you told me to do, and they're like, no. You know, our respect for you is so much. We're not gonna make you feel bad or something like that. It's mentorship would be that idea, and the.
Yeah, I want to hit on that because I won't go in. There's a story of something I heard at a kid's graduation, but the speaker was talking about it. He was a runner and about this coach who expected more from him. And he did it in a way that I, as a father, it's a slippery slope of telling the kid kind of, you're never doing well enough. And I have a lot of, I heard a lot of stories about people who were damaged by that. No matter how they did, they were told they didn't do it well enough. Now, over here in a different spirit, though, saying, man, that is awesome. And I think you've got more in you that building you up.
Right.
And, you know, and so for Anthony Thomas, does he have somebody in their lives? You and I have that. No matter what we're going after, we don't have somebody not believing in us.
Right.
We've got each other. We've got spouses, other people who are going, yeah, and support. Man, a lot of people don't have that. So not only have accountability, but have that. Well, that's a consummate Zig Ziglar to have encouragement. Where do you have that? And you can't go drum that up. If you don't, you can go look for accountability. You can't. You can look for encouragement. It's hard to find.
It is. I'm thinking for the person who's out there alone on an island, and you're in a slump. People aren't meant to be on an island. Find your tribe.
I'm with you, but there's still people that struggle with that. Man, I've got nobody. I'll tell a story. My dad, back when he had a bad business, failing and almost trying not to go bankrupt. And it was him and him alone, you know, at least waking up in the day, getting in a car and going, figuring out how am I going to make a living?
Yeah.
And he talks about it now. He says, most people will emulate that feeling of despair, even in posture. Man, you're downtrodden, you're slumped shoulders. You do all these things to just embrace that. And he said, I was aware of that from his psychology background. And he says, my paraphrasing, rebelled against it, man. Yeah. I put my shoulders back. I, you know, did some exercise. I made sure I had a good food. And back then he had a cassette tape player in the seat of the car because the stereo didn't work. And he would play things like Zig Ziglar and other people and use those for encouragement. Now, they weren't speaking and saying Dan Miller, but he was taking it in his head to say, Dan Miller, you are capable of more. And he fed himself. He says, I fed and fed and fed and fed and fed till I believed it and I walked it out. And he says, I've worked with so many people over my lifetime, and that's the abnormal thing to do that. Yeah. Generally, when we get in that hole, we embrace it. And so it's just human nature.
It is. And I'm thinking of that guy now. And how do you encourage somebody who's there? Medically speaking, it's kind of, you know, if we label it depression, the last thing a depressed person wants to do is go exercise or eat right or whatever else it is.
And we want to label them and in some ways give an excuse. You got to label, you've got that. Not your fault. You've got depression.
Well, right.
Landed on you.
Yeah. It's a biochemical. It's not your fault. It's your chemistry. And we've talked about that many times before, how it's both, and your actions create chemistry. Your chemistry leads to actions. And so I'm thinking about our culture now again, because so many people who embrace the I can't are forgetting that it really is a big deal to be a dad. A good one.
Oh, huge.
A husband, and we live in a culture where we feel like a failure or whatever if we're not making as much money, going on this vacation, those kind of things, and that's all.
Well, even that as a dad, what's the telltale thing you want to say? Dude, my kid is in Harvard Law School. Now, he may hate you, the kid might, but my kid's at and then you're a good dad. Well, no, you maybe were a good trainer,
or my kid got an athletic scholarship, or yeah. My kid is captain of the whatever, and. That's right. It seems like all of this is going to focus us back on what is your worldview?
Well, look at here. Can I read this? This is literally. I'm just reading these in order. So I'm just going to pick out a place. A guy. His name's Tarz. He says faith, and I said, as it pertains to health and wellness, faith as in trusting that you are capable of accomplishing the big things you want to do. Well, good golly,
That's kind of where we were going.
Hit the nail. I mean, ultimately, yeah, back to Thomas' thing, when you get in that hole, do you have faith that you ultimately could achieve more, that you are capable? And I think we have a culture that more and more doesn't have faith in themselves.
They don't.
You're sitting there, I have no answer to this. How do you gain more faith in yourself?
That's right, because the step forward, like you said, is going to cost you.
Yeah.
To move forward, and what I always say is anything that you do, even in the health side, it will cost you time. You've got to put time into it. It costs you effort. It'll cost you energy. It'll cost you money. And we've added it'll cost you vulnerability. You've got to put yourself out there. And that's where I think the guy in the pit is like, I can't take any more failure. I can't take any more risk.
Cost to invest in yourself. My dad did this show. I did a show with him been a couple years ago about his concept. I don't know if he developed it or heard it or whatever, but that you should be spending. Like we think about anybody who goes to church, you've heard you should tithe 10% and whatever you think about that. But his point was you should invest 5% of your income in you.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. I think about it in some ways. And you could.
I don't.
Well, yeah. But you could say, I'll challenge you on that because you could, if we say invest, our primary investments are usually time or money. So okay. Just because you're not spending money going to seminars or buying this or buying that, what time you spend time.
Okay.
I mean, you spend every morning, you get up and you invest in yourself. You have different times that you're investing in yourself. And to that degree, and what I thought of when I read Tar's question there, again, back to, this is, we're talking about health and wellness and focused on physical and mental, but it's all personal development. So even to my other, podcasts, and the one that always rings in my head is Zig Ziglar saying, you are who you are and where you are because of what you put in your mind. You can change who you are and where you are by what you put into your mind. And just realizing that we are all coming to this world as these vessels. And the only reason we're anything is because of what's put in it. You put a baby in there. If you put a baby in a cage and never tended to it, what would it be in a year?
Yeah.
A blob. I mean, it's just
an animal.
It is what it is because of what we put in. So we all got stuff put in, good and bad, up to today.
That's
so
right.
we're where we are and who we are because of whether we chose it or not. But now going forward, an answer to that, I don't have a better answer than that. If you want to change anything, put new information in.
I appreciate this. Sounds also like Hal Elrod and his morning. He's like, you wake up in the morning and you decide what to put in your head and your body. You decide how to move.
Mm-hmm.
You intellectually think about it. You do it. It sounds too good to be true. And yet it's,
but we know it is.
It is true.
I mean, you went to how much money was spent for you to go to college, medical school, all that. To get the right information in your head so that you could get the degree of doctor.
Right.
You have. It's a big achievement. And it
right.
Was,
and I didn't sign up for that on day number one saying, I am looking so forward to 8 hours of study a day, to, getting stressed out about this and that and the other, to, you look forward to the degree.
Yeah.
And not even the degree, but what are you going to go do with it?
Mm-hmm.
What comes after that? That... In fact, I just told you this morning that, in my, endeavors from an entrepreneurial side over here, it's like I need to shift. And one of those shifting things was in my messaging to people is I get lost in the details of the cool side of the biochemistry of if you do this, then this is going on in whatever. But what people want to hear is, so you're telling me I'm going to feel better And then I always get stuck with, well, maybe it's not guaranteed, but no. Tell them they're going to feel better.
Well,
without saying you're going to be younger.
Yes, there will be a higher probability of wellness if you do XYZ.
That's right. But people don't make emotional investing decisions on that probability. Like, nobody's counting probability at a Vegas table. They are feeling, they are making an emotional decision, right or wrong.
Emotional.
Humans.
Inebriated decision, yeah.
Okay, so Vegas is a bad example. So
well, no, but I know, I got you. Yeah, it's,
even on your life partner choices, I'm going to marry this person, it is, and not a risk calculation, pros and cons list, whatever. There's a big feeling in there, yeah. And you, now there's all, then after that it's hard, and there's commitment, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So thinking about the guy in the slump, man, that's hard, but faith in the fact that what you put in your head, what you, how you move your body, how you hold your shoulders, posture, is a piece of who you're gonna become.
I'm a foodie, and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table, and then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes. From coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family owned since 1935. And I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of 7 requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Yeah, I mean, we're into the psychology of it, which is all of it. I mean, and to that, we don't speak that specifically, but that is what this show is about. Not the specifics of you should eat this, you should exercise this way, you should take the supplement. We're talking about them all, but we're ultimately talking about the psychology. The psychology is what makes or breaks
it. It's the why.
Well, that's what we figured out with you. I mean, you're sitting here doing personal development one-on-one with every patient, and you can figure out a lot. Ultimately, it's up to them to go out and then do or not do.
Right. Eat this.
Comply or not. I know you don't like that word. Comply or not. Okay. Comply or not comply. But that's
with themselves. It's not me telling them what to do. They got, they think themselves, I should eat this or eat that. Well, do you comply with yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Psychology. I mean, this, again, I love that. It's like the truth is, you know, better than what we could make up. Beth Hinton, she asks about overall diet and nutrition, and specifically how to stop nervous eating.
Oh,
I love that. That's specific.
Yeah.
And so many of us have an Achilles heel in our health and wellness. So many is one or two, but I love that. First off, kudos for recognizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's step number one.
Yeah.
That's my vulnerability statement. That is she vulnerabled herself. She
vulnerabilized. Yeah. Whatever.
To be vulnerable enough to say, I have a nervous habit. I don't chew my fingernails, but I chew on this food or whatever. And to recognize it and say, okay, now what? And that nervous eating or emotional eating.
I was going to say, who doesn't have emotional eating?
Well,
a lot of people have to. I mean, we know that people do. When I'm sad, I do. When I'm excited, it's celebratory. No,
nobody eats clinically, sterilely. Okay. Right? So everybody eats at a table. Let's say it's a family and you've got great relationships with these people, or it's strained. Yeah. The table is vibrant and alive, or it's dull and muted, or you know, something.
But we can say that, but you know, to some people it's not to an acute stage. So maybe she has an acute stage of doing that. Somebody else does with being sad, feeling lonely, stressed, relational strife, whatever, and they eat for, you know, those reasons. So she's went nervous eating.
Right. So then I would say, what is the nervousness from? Now, it makes me think of our friend Steve Smith, who said it's from the thought of not eating. Yeah. Made me not nervous, but terrified.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to plan meals. Is the nervousness from, you know, relationship things, work things, the you know, if she's of an age 40, 50 or somewhere around in there, then she got taught when she was younger, it's actually good to eat every 2 or 3 hours. So then you go 4 hours and you don't eat, and there could even be a chemical signal to say, hey, you know, time to eat. And that triggers a nervousness in you.
That program, I remember that one of my first thoughts towards that degree was thinking I'm being a funny, good father. And the kid comes in, I'm going to help you, it's bleeding, you know, band or whatever. And I go, I'll get you some medicine. I go get a chocolate chip. And, you know, and they can't, I mean, unless they're really hurt, you're going to get a little bit of a smile. And we go back and I thought, man, that's brilliant parental psychology right there. And then somebody, it might have been my wife or somebody's like, dude, you're teaching them that sugar is the cure all? Well, son of a gun, I guess I, again, truth is better than fiction. Evan, that's the next question. I would love to learn how to kick the sugar habit. Well,
to the curb,
to the curb, and eat better.
Okay, well, there's a big one too. Not a few words have been written and talked about. You know, kicking the sugar habit.
This is my layman's non-doctoral perspective, but it's hard for me not to think that sugar is the number one largest, most detrimental drug in at least America, if not the world.
Yeah, no, we've made that statement. But nobody says that.
Well,
I don't know. If you calculate a drug as, let's say, cocaine and say, okay, what does this cost in terms of police, law enforcement, deaths, how many hospitalizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Addictions.
And addiction counseling, and all of the cost. It would be a big billions of whatever dollars for cocaine. But think of alcohol. Huge cost emotionally, socially, and think of, you know, the alcoholic father or whatever, and what that cost generations down. Well,
though, can I pull that out though? I mean, because if we're talking about alcohol in the aspect of sugar, it is a piece of the pie of that. I mean, you get the sugar hit.
Yeah.
I mean, so aside from the inebriate or whatever the what's the term for the. The alcohol
feeling, the
inebriation or whatever, buzz or whatever.
The feeling, the
There's
buzz,
also the
right.
sugar. My brother, I can say this. My brother,
well, in some, like once you get to hard alcohol, there's no like, you know, vodka and stuff like that. There's the higher the alcohol, the lower. If you're at a 200 proof, 100 proof, or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But wine is
wine. Sugar, my brother was a full on alcoholic. Almost killed himself. Shut down his pancreas. Is that possible?
Okay.
Whatever was that. I mean, hospital hold. And it was wine was his main thing. And during that time, and I was the sugar tooth, you know, in the family. I got a sugar tooth. And he said, man, I just don't. And then he went off alcohol and he's been sober and he developed a sugar tooth. That was his fix for sugar as well. So I was just saying that just to include that when we're talking about sugar, it's not just a candy bar. It's
There are famous people. There was a golfer who famously quit his alcohol, but he'd walk around with M&Ms.
Oh yeah.
Professionally golfing and gained however many pounds. And so you're replacing one addiction with another. Let's go back into the – and so sugar, carbs, the whole shebang, if you look at the amount of heart disease, diabetes, overweightness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, people who lose their vitality, they lose their energy, they lose and sugar and insulin as it triggers is an inflammatory marker. So the consequence of this sugar addiction is part of your – why your knees hurt and why you're too tired and why you have brain fog. And we could just go on and on. So the cost is part of – a significant part of the 3.1 whatever trillion dollars a year.
Yeah.
So it by far is the costliest. Biggest drug.
I mean, can you imagine right now, like walking into the grocery store, grabbing a bag of M&Ms and somebody going, hey, that's hurting our culture. That's offensive to me.
Mark Hyman famously, I think this is attributed to him. He said, look, if you put on paper the consequences of what this does to our children, if you just put that on paper and said, you know what, XYZ, North Korea did this to our children. We'd bomb them in a day. We would attack them and shut them down. And this is an act of war.
Yeah.
It's like poisoning the water system. It's an act of war. What we are doing to our children.
I wonder how do we get to the place of being so oblivious to the amount of sugar and stuff? Because we'll see that. I'll see somebody goes, no, I don't give my kid candy and whatever. And the kid's got a granola bar, healthy granola bar that has 50 grams of sugar, a healthy yogurt that has 50 grams of sugar.
A diet drink or apple juice.
Exactly. Yeah. Apple juice, which is like syrup. The amount
and their
of sugar.
Dad gives them a chocolate chip when they skin their knee.
And
the
dad gives them a chocolate chip. And they are just hyped. And we get them up in the morning. We give them carbs and sugary cereals or even the healthy stuff. Still empty processed carbs.
The elementary school here, you had to send your child to school with two snacks.
Two snacks, yeah.
And a lunch. So yeah. A lunch and two snacks were required. Like they would call you.
Like the kid's going to die.
The kid's going to die.
Without their...
It's an insane maker.
We are so...
And so now this is Evan.
Yeah, this is Evan. I never want to get clinical, but real quick, I mean, when sugar goes in, it is a dopamine hit. I mean, it's as opposed to if I put in and take a bite of tuna, it just, you know, I taste tuna, it's good, whatever, I get that. But sugar is a different animal as far What's it trigger?
Well, and then now we're going to go into, you know, for you and I, the trigger in our brain is going to be XYZ. But for Evan, it'll be ABC. Mm. It'll be because he's trained it.
But I mean, physiologically, doesn't it do, you know, whatever with insulin and this jacks up and this responds? I mean, what happened?
Yeah, but remember, you will die without carbs. So it's not going to jack you up. It's a part of the normal system of you need carbohydrates in order to fuel your body eventually, right? So the biochemistry of the body is this amazing thing that's built to keep you going even days and days without food.
But that carbohydrate back when would have been a berry off a bush,
right.
A fruit off of a tree.
Even the wine back then.
A vegetable or whatever.
The juice back then.
Didn't you have a ratio of the sugar, the carb, the protein? You had a decent ratio. Now we have M&Ms and it's pure table sugar.
We're mainlining it.
So our body's wigging out, or it should be. We've gotten ourselves used to where it doesn't wig out.
And even beyond that, we've hypered it with high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where most, so even now table sugar is better for you than.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Right. This is real granulated, whatever sugar.
No. Table sugar is less of a sugar hit than some of the white rices, the white potatoes, potato starch, those kind of things. So it's less sugary than sugar.
So you look at some of the Asian cultures and say they're addicted to their white rice sugar. Interestingly, they're not often overweight.
That's right. Whether
I guess the counterpart is veggie. I don't know. I don't understand that.
There is right. So then when you start to look at that cultural medicine, like the Asian culture and why is there less overweightness and that kind of thing and what else is going on.
Somebody's done the study. Go Google it. You guys can find out. I don't know what it is.
It's probably part of the blue zone thing too.
They probably walk more and they have other habits.
The French paradox.
Yeah.
These guys are eating foie gras, whatever that is, and pate.
I don't remember.
Goose liver.
They eat some fatty carb stuff late at night.
Over a bottle of wine.
2 hours.
Over two hours of time.
And we hork it down in 2 minutes.
Right. It's the French paradox.
Yeah.
And maybe they do it without guilt. The famous question of if you hold up a piece of chocolate cake and you do word association and you hold up a piece of chocolate cake, what's the most common word association in America?
I don't know. Fat?
Guilt.
Oh, guilt.
What is it in France?
Probably something good like celebration.
Celebration.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Because they do it. Not every day.
Not every day. Not celebratorily. So they're not feeling guilty.
Yeah, so him asking, how do you kick the sugar habit? So we all know.
Well, recognize. That, like we just said, recognize it is, and people have heard, it's harder to kick this drug than cocaine. And so sometimes it is. If he's already trained himself to light up that side of his brain, dopamine and et cetera, et cetera. And that's one of those grooves in the brain that we talked about last time, I think, that the way you eat is also digging this groove in your brain. And that's why it's other people are saying, or like your brother thought, oh, I just don't. That's effort. That's time and effort and vulnerability to say, I'm just not going to eat that.
Yeah.
And so, but if you do eat that, you've dug a groove that way, or you dig a groove in not eating. So here he is. And number one is to recognize you're in a pit.
Yeah.
Okay. So rather than trying to jump out of a 10-foot pit on day number one and be depressed and wonder why you're failing, build a ladder, and we're back to set ladder number one.
And there is some personality style in there. I mean, there are some people who do well to just cold turkey stop, and they succeed. That's probably the minority.
Well, that's like cold turkey cocaine addiction. You can do it, but your life is threatened.
Yeah.
Now, sugar, your life's
threatened. But I'm just saying, if there's somebody out there and you're successful, I mean, I've had some time to do in that and been okay, but I've probably built a rut for being able to do that more. But Yeah, with Evan. Yeah, you're saying, you know, baby steps. If you're going to take it out cold turkey, it's almost, I hear you say that with patients a lot. If you just totally stop, it's going to be unsustainable. You're going to fail.
Or
generally, probability.
Like if I'm talking to you, I would say, are you going to jump into the cold water in the deep end of the pool and just get going? Or are you going to wade in and get used to it? What are you going to do?
It depends. What else?
I would picture you as a jumper inner.
I usually do.
Okay. So I'm the pusher. I'm going to push people into the deep end. Jane is small steps,
so great
baby steps, and she's gracious and cautious. And so I am at risk of offending somebody. Jane is at risk of not pushing them hard enough, and they just kind of wallow around over there in the shallow end because, you know, my feet are used to the cold water, but every time it hits my thigh, I'm like, ah.
Well, so that's – you can take that personal preference. What do you, I would think – and I hear you with patience. Most people, if they just jump in – It's gonna be unsustainable, too hard, you're gonna fail. You're better off to do the baby steps. But yeah, to Evan, to setting up, you know, I love Ben Hardy's book, Willpower Doesn't Work. I don't have willpower, we talk about this a lot, against sugar like that. If it's M&Ms, they are not allowed in my house because I'll eat them.
Yeah. And just last night, I'm rummaging around, you know, doing the dishes, and I'm gonna go look in the box. And my thought was, oh, darn, she bought M&Ms.
Really?
Yeah. And here's the reason I didn't have it. They weren't open yet. I'm like, I'm not going to be the first person to open the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once the bag is open,
oh my gosh. My one of my older daughters or something, she made Buckeyes, you know, which is a peanut butter mix with chocolate. And I've had plenty of times of just not doing it. But I did one. She brought it over to me. Daddy, I ate one. And then boom, five, six. And I mean, it's just tablespoons of sugar at a time. So, you know, the first I think is create your environment, whether that's home being number one, which is so hard if you don't have your spouse and family on board and all that stuff that tempts you is all around. It's really hard. I'm grateful like you to have a family who is generally supportive. And a lot of times when we do something like that, we'll try to do it together. Hey, we're all going to cut down on sugar or whatever, but you know, create your culture. I've had my wife sometimes, and I've said, you know, take whatever it might be, just put it where I can't see it.
Right.
Don't know where it is.
Well, and for us, it's don't buy it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if there's celebration, we're going to put it on the budget and say, hey, there's a birthday, there's a movie night, there's whatever, buy the stuff. The same way we set up a menu for our week, we set up a menu for our desserts.
Yeah.
And
And being accountable again, so that's a good one for me. If I say, we do that. We'll come and, you know, we'll sit down on the deck and then you'll tell me, you know, I'm not doing sugar or I'm not. And what a cool, we have our own blue zone of healthy people doing that. And so somebody sits out on the deck for lunch and they're not eating. Go, oh, you fasting? Yeah. It's just how beautiful is that to have that support and back to encouragement and accountability. And so, yeah, whether it's sugar, whatever. So, you know, setting up your environment. And then for me, though, it is looking at what is the point of it. And I have a healthy, I think, fear. You and I talk about this, but sometimes I think the most motivating one is not how I look and feel today so much as the fear of looking ahead, especially as I look at the culture and look around and go, man, I do not want to be, in Dr. Randy James' words, lingering. Right. I want to be vibrant till the end as much as possible. And what I do today is going to build up. And if I have the sugar bomb today and the next day, and the inertia scares me. And I know if I start, it's so hard to stop. That's what keeps me from not exercising. If I miss a day, 2 days, 3 days, sometimes I can just feel my mojo leaving. And that scares me. And it was a month going to go by and I'm not going to do anything.
And I'm going to say to Evan, too, on the sugar thing, that what you just described is the groove, right, in your brain. And I like the word mojo. We use that because it's this immeasurable, indefinable, and people in a pit have lost their mojo. They're like, ah, and every time I take a step up, I slip back down. So recognize that groove is there as a consequence of your own choices, you know, blame or not blame, whatever. And the thing that you just described of the groove of exercise as a part of the mojo is you recognize that it isn't just there and you're lucky. You've earned it. You work for it. It costs you time and money and effort and vulnerability, all that stuff. And you might lose it. It's not a guaranteed thing there. And I think for the guy in the groove, in the rut that he doesn't want to be in, to kick the sugar habit is to say, okay, here you are, and you want to start another groove over here. And the one I think about with a smile is the fact that I'm looking out at our deck right now. I'm looking forward to lunch, and my lunch is going to be A. So last night we had ramen. You know, we lived in Japan, so we've made our version of healthy ramen. And so I have a boiled egg and a bowl full of cabbage with spices on it. And I'm so grateful. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too, but I just know people hear that and think, that's a terrible life. And I get that, though, but I remember that.
I remember the days when I thought that was a terrible life, but I just transition took a long time.
I know. I just want to address that. I remember going to my aunt and uncle on the farm, their house. I loved going there. And then you sit down to eat, and it's like a glass of water. Oh, seriously? It's just water and a salad. What is wrong with you people? There's no joy in life. And they didn't have TV. I mean, it was. Yeah, but so I get that because, and I'm also laughing too because my daughter made this incredible lentil soup, vegetables, all natural stuff. I struggle. You see my allergy test. Lentils are not a good. Yeah. I did have some, and it bothered my sleep, so I'm not going to have it for leftover or for lunch today. So we didn't really have anything. There was squash. We also made squash, zucchini. So I have a bowl of zucchini, sauteed zucchini. It's all I had. So I grabbed a little 3-ounce thing of tuna fish. I'll put some ranch dressing on it. That's all I got. But it's fine. And I'm also able to withstand it because I always know that I'm going to have a good dinner. So I can put stuff off and go to that. But a couple of things with that. I remember, I'm trying to think of their names, and I typed it in. It didn't come up. Man, it's old. 30 years old, something like that. These people, I want to say their last name was like Diamond or something, but they came out with the book Diet for Life. And their concept, or what I brought away from it, was we need to stop dieting for, you know, a time, do this, do that, and just establish what is our diet for life. This is the way that I eat. Not that we can't have some flex here and there, but just deciding and saying, I don't eat raw sugar. I don't eat high sugar. And you and I don't. We just don't. And we have that celebratory thing. And it brings me to your phrase that is the most haunting, is such a bad word, convicting, but it does, but kind of haunts me, is whatever I'm doing every day, I am becoming, be becoming, I am becoming. And whatever I engage in, healthy or unhealthy. So on the unhealthy side, if I'm eating sugar, what am I becoming? If I'm eating processed foods, if I'm overeating, if I'm not exercising, and then you can get into other things. I mean, as a guy, I've dealt with that with pornography. If I engage in that every day, what am I becoming? What am I doing to my marriage? That haunts me more than if it was just bad in that one moment. Right. What is the buildup? Those daily deposits. Again, I think, I hope healthfully, the fear of that is often the biggest motivator for me. It's going, man, if I do this now, what is that doing to me out here?
Right. You just said a lot, spoke a lot in, you know, the diet for life. There's food for life. Joel Fuhrman wrote Eat to Live. So that concept is out there. It's strong. It's good. I totally agree with it. Be becoming, and you know, in my mind, it's like you put on a layer of paint every day. What color are you becoming? What shade are you becoming? That's what good. Layer of paint? It's about as exciting as watching grass grow. And we're back to the frustrating thing is nobody's going to write a book on layers of paint. But to become solid, stable, secure, these in a wise way, not the addiction of security, but the gift of security, and security doesn't mean, yep, you got your $1 million in the bank, right? Again, we're so slippery sloped. Like, that's where I would put my idol of security, of wanting to have that dollars in the bank, so that if something weird happens, then I'm okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not it. And we're back to the faith question of where are you putting your heart and your soul? And then layer upon layer, day upon day, you are eating to support that. You are speaking into people, hearing words from other people. Zig also says you are who you hang around. And, you know, John Maxwell is like, Dave Ramsey, the last 5 books you read or whatever. What's going in your brain? What's going in your mouth? How do you move your body? How do you posture? How do you sleep? Is layer upon layer, paint molecule upon paint molecule, the point breath of what, upon breath.
I love that you said eating. Am I eating to support? I think, am I living to support? Again, clarify, we got to have a clarity on what's the end goal. What do we want to be out here? And that it's not a sprint. We always talk about we're in the microwave society. Yeah. And I just recently, again, I'm on a protocol supplements right now. And you said, this is what I did. And I got this result, but it wasn't until 90 days. I think 90 days. I have to spend the money, take these pills, not seeing any results, not knowing that I will for sure.
Right.
But the probability is better than That's if I do nothing.
So. You know, there's lots of scriptural references for these ideas too. Romans 12, 1 and 2 is about be becoming. And then in Timothy, there is a passage that talks about, you know, the farmer tills the soil. He cannot make it rain or grow.
Yeah.
He can do nothing to make the plant come out of the ground. The soldier goes to war. He does not know if he's going to die.
Yeah.
He cannot control a random arrow.
Yeah.
And there's one more. Oh, and the racer... the athlete competes, but he cannot control if he wins. But every one of those people, if the farmer doesn't till, doesn't plant, then no plants will grow.
Yeah.
If the guy gets scared and does not go to war, then victory cannot be had. So it's tension.
But that's why I love your perspective. Every day I'm being becoming. I'm becoming. So I'm giving myself, in that sense, what am I doing to give myself the probability, the possibility?
Yeah, possibility even. Number one, is possible at all.
Yeah.
And then number two is, and this is where I think Zig and John Maxwell and these guys say, okay, how do you increase the probability?
Yeah.
And that's because we might die in the next 10 minutes, you know, fall down or whatever, hit your head. We're not guaranteed another day of life. But how do you increase the probability? Well, don't drink and drive, wear your seatbelt, have your tires changed, and a thousand other things that we all do habitually every day with those grooves.
Yeah.
But we get stuck on sugar, alcohol, don't exercise, don't sleep. We live in a microwave culture, and I would say even more than that, we live in the entertainment culture that I live to be entertained.
Yeah.
Eating is entertainment now.
Yes.
Rather than I eat to live.
Rather than medicine.
And you have to be careful because you don't live to exercise. That would be the 100-mile accomplishment. You do exercise to live well. What does live well mean? Well, it's all these.
It's how we're defining it. Well, great stuff. And there's so many more questions. We'll just keep on, man. I don't know if anything could be better. We could sit here and think about what's a good topic to talk about, or they can tell us. And we'll keep rolling.
The questions coming. Yeah.
I trust many of you found resonance with these questions and the answers. And we're going to continue in the next Functional Friday episode with more, such as keeping muscle tone after 65. It's actually a big number. I think a lot of people are concerned about doing that after 35 or 45 or 55 too. But finding a health coach, we also address. We get into food allergy testing, finding a functional medicine doctor, and kicking chronic ear infections came up. Again, you're welcome to connect with Dr. James at truelifemedicine.com or email him and his team at info@truelifemedicine.com. Thank you, as always, for choosing to tune into this self-helpful podcast. I trust you got value. It'd be great if you would leave a review if you got value. Let us know. And most of all, hope you talk about this further. Take the ideas, the concepts, talk with other people. I sincerely hope I've helped you help yourself so that you can help others.